Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What a difference a win makes after the 76ers take down the Knicks on Thursday night. Everything changes in a positive way, of course, with the fan base. Welcome to the PHLY Sixers podcast here along with Derek Bodner and Kyle Newbeck. Back with us in studio. They've been all over the place, folks, and we appreciate them being here. Of course, it's their show, but they've had to travel, be at the arenas.
It's our show. Yeah. Well, it's not their show.
We're not going to hold that 3-month vacation against you forever, Devon.
Well, you have.
And certainly
you still keep the tally. You still keep the tally going. But it's okay.
And certainly since, you know, you've been the point man here on the show while we've been at the arena, it'd hardly be fair to say it's our show. And
I meant in the sense of you guys have been in every other place but here, but it's glad to have you back. I am Devon Givens with Derek Bodner and Kyle Newbeck. Brianna's producing the show. All of you, of course, with us in the chat, and we have a lot to talk about again. Just the different feeling that it was after last night's victory, and then having everything go with the Embiid piece of it, dropping 50 points, knowing he's already dealing with a leg injury. But even after that, we get the report that he's also dealing with something else, Derek, when it comes to the Bell's palsy is broken by Adrian Wojnarowski. Yeah. And that just adds to the story, of course, of what he was able to do in that space, down 2-0, following what he said in New York when you guys were there, saying, we're going to win this series. And I was one of them that's like, you got to be careful about saying you were the better team down 2-0. But for him to do that, that now adds to the lore of what Joel Embiid has done so far. And it actually helps his playoff history now a little bit if, of course, he's able to do a little bit more in the series and push them through.
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, we in our last show that we did in studio as a trio, we mentioned that he had gotten hit in the eye in game one. After it happened, I had people reach out to me and say, like, hey, don't so much look for a specific incident that is causing whatever's going on with the eye. It's something more general. Now we got confirmation on what that is. Obviously, when you start seeing his symptoms with the one side of his mouth not really moving, people started speculating online. So I think it's probably good that they eventually did address this, even if Joe maybe didn't want it being out there. You can only go to so many press conferences with sunglasses on, not showing your face before people really start asking questions. So I think it's good that people know what he's going through, because what he's going through is a lot. And I sort of wrote about that this morning, allphly.com. You can read what I wrote, what Kyle wrote. It's all there. But the whole soft label, not just for him, but athletes in general, always feels weird to me, because it feels like we use soft as a synonym for injured, when being injured means you're playing, like the implication is sort of that he's unable to play through pain that other people would be able to play through, when the reality is, because he is frequently injured, he's playing through more pain than most people have to play through. And right now, not only is he trying to come back from a knee that he said last night wasn't really feeling better, he just got kind of pushed through it. Not that it wasn't feeling better from when he had needed the surgery, but from the it hasn't been progressing better over the course of the series, is I guess the way I would say that. But he's also now dealing with a blurry vision, dry eyes, all this other stuff that's going on top of the long, long history of injuries. And it's just like, I don't think he gets enough credit for trying to fight through what he has to try to fight through. And there's a difference between, yes, he's unreliable with his health. You don't know if you can count on him in the postseason. That is all true and valid and fair. But it doesn't mean he's soft. In fact, I would argue the opposite. It means he fights through more than most people have to fight through. And to see him go through all of that, to go through the vision problems and whatnot, to go through the knee problems, put up a 50 spot with their season on the line, including, you know, Kyle and I were sitting there on press row. When he picked up his third foul with 6 minutes left in the second quarter, we said, I don't know if you can keep him in here.
Scary hours, he's
not,
for sure.
Yeah, he's not very reliable right now in terms of controlling his emotions. And for the most part, Kyle and I are let the superstar play through their foul trouble. Last night, it looked like it could have burned them. Well, in the final 2.5 quarters, he put up 40 points and committed zero fouls after that fact. He went from completely out of control, and I think that Mitchell Robinson play was out of control, and I'm sure we'll get to it. He went from completely out of control to controlling every aspect of the game almost in the blink of an eye. And it was really, really impressive to watch. Really impressive.
Yeah. So we can get into the Robinson play and all that at some point. Devon and I were talking before you got here, Derek, and something that struck me coming out of the game, maybe rewatching parts of the game last night as I was working on stories, was that although Joel was out of control, and I think it's almost inarguable he was out of control at times last night. I think that was an example of the difference between Joel Embiid in this series and Joel Embiid when they've been in tough spots in the past. Some of it has been his public bravado, right? Like coming out and saying after game two, we're the better team. We should be up 2-0. We're going to win this series. But then coming into this game three where the stakes are very clear, right? They lose that game. The series is over. You're not climbing out of a 3-0 hole. There's a reason nobody's ever done it in NBA history. I shouldn't say it's impossible, but it's basically impossible to climb out of that hole. The Knicks have been able to impose their will physically, turn the games into the type of games that they want to play. And Joel Embiid comes out, and whether he's reckless, whether he's out of control, I still think if that's a regular season game or if game two had not unfolded the way it did at the end, that he's ejected from that game. I don't think it would have been
certainly
super arguable.
Certainly a chance, yes.
Yes. But I think it was important, and Tyrese Maxey, another guy, said this at the podium in the locker room after the game. Joel came out and set a tone and said, I'm not letting these guys push us around. Like, I'm gonna hit first, and you guys are going to have to respond. Thought it was telling that after the Mitchell Robinson plays, there's that little fracas under the rim. He's in Dante DiVincenzo's face saying, what are you going to do about it? And actively challenging guys. You know, we've seen so many big games where Joel gets off to a rough start. He puts on like the sad, mopey face. He drops the shoulders. He gets taken out of the game. And while he flirted with serious disaster, and it could have gone the other way, I would rather see the version of Joel that is going to hit first and see how the other team responds. Because the value of building a team around a 7-foot-tall, nearly 300-pound player is that you should be winning the physical battles. You should be putting a shoulder into somebody. You should be hammering guys in the post, whatever you need to do to set the tone and impose your will on the game. Too many times we haven't seen that from Joel. So that was great. And then, oh yeah, by the way, he's one of the most skilled big men to ever live. And he went absolutely crazy from three in the second half. So flirted with disaster, as I said, but I guess all's well that ends well in the end.
People beat up little people.
The Chip
Kelly.
Quoted
by the great Chip Kelly.
The only smart thing. Well, not the only
smart
thing.
Lane Johnson, too.
One of the few smart things that Chip said or did during his time in charge of the Eagles.
The only thing I would say is he does have to play smarter. Like you said, he flirted with disaster. When you are a role player on another team, you are going to try to get Joel Embiid to react. That's going to be true for every playoff series he ever plays in from now until the moment he retires. He's too important. He cannot react like he did. You cannot let emotions get the best of him. He's got to be above that, not because he's got to be a better person morally than anyone else, but because he's just so goddamn important.
He was teetering on that edge in that first half, and it was evident whether you were watching it in the arena or on television, and you could see right there where you're like, okay, this guy is not being himself right now. He's letting the emotions get to him a little bit too much here in this spot. And they, in order for them to win, he had the first couple of buckets right there, and he looked fine until he started getting hit. And as Kyle said, Tyrese Maxey mentioning it, that Joel Embiid decided, we're not going to sit here and be the soft ones, just to use the term that Derek talked about. We're going to hit back and we're going to fight back. Now, this is not that team when you look at them and say, oh, they're the more physical New York Knicks of the 90s type basketball team, or the Bad Boys of the late 80s, early 90s, where you expect anybody on the Philadelphia 76ers, maybe outside of Kyle Lowry, to really get into some sort of fight and
maybe
believe that.
Maybe Oubre, too,
Yeah, but certainly when you had Pat Beverly and Marcus Morris here, you're like, oh, okay, I can see the value at with those two guys. But Not Joel Embiid. Sure, he's gotten into things over the course of his career, but never looking at him as a fighter. But that's the one thing a lot of people look at and saying, play tougher, be stronger with the basketball around the basket where you finish there. Stop taking, in this case, stop being so weak as a big man and taking jump shots from the free throw line. Although he makes those at like a 65% clip, but that's a whole nother story. But for him to change what happened in that first half, where it looked to be disastrous. They were down 4 at the half, partly because he couldn't keep his emotions in check. Mm-hmm. And then coming out of that locker room, that next focus that he has to score 18 in the third, hit 4 three-pointers, 3 of which were in a row, and he was not alone where Isaiah Hartenstein was in his face to also get fouled on a three-pointer again because they had to crowd him as much as they did, make all 3 free throws when we got on him for missing 4 in game number 2 while dealing with what he's dealing with. And again, just shifting the focus, leading them to 43 points in that third quarter. That showed us, it showed me, and the guys have already said their piece, showed us a different version of himself in which we've seen him put up big numbers before, but there was a lot of things. There was a lot of things that he had to battle last night, battling himself, battling that defense, battling whatever that stuff that he has dealing with right now with his knee and other things to overcome to get this team back into the spot that they are currently in where everybody feels just a little bit better knowing that you have to chip away one game at a time to get to the spot. And your leader has to do that. And their leader, it may not be vocal all the time, but their leader did it in terms of his play after he had such a rough start.
And I will say this too, coming into the second half. Tyrese Maxey showed you the difference between him as Joel's co-star and most of the rest of these guys as Joel's co-star. What's the first play Tyrese Maxey makes in the second half?
Mm-hmm.
Is him blowing up an entry to Brunson, getting a steal, going coast to coast for a dunk. Mm-hmm. And that in many ways shows his evolution, right? We've talked for years about, well, the one thing that scares you about Tyrese are the defensive limitations, right? And whatever the roster looked like around him, he was a potential target to exploit in a playoff series. Certainly, we might see that later if they play some of these teams with bigger wings, bigger scoring wings. But Tyrese makes a defensive play and turns that one play. He's 3 for 10 at the half, didn't really have anything going. OG Anunoby's bogging him down.
Yep.
Turns that one breakaway dunk into a flurry coming out of halftime. And we've talked all year about how important it is that he plays so well off of Joel Embiid because they finally have someone with the skill set that complements him in every way, right? He's an attacking, scoring threat at all times playing off of Joel. Dribble handoff, he can pull a 3. Pick and rolls, he can get to the rim, he can pull up, he can get the ball back to Joel at the elbow. He's mastered the pocket passes, the behind-the-back passes, all of that stuff. And Tyrese really lifted the building, it felt like, when he started, you know, the first 5-6 minutes of that half,
yeah,
getting really hot. And on top of that, I've said this to you guys many times privately, but I think I've probably said it on the show. I think Tyrese's personality is such a beautiful contrast to Joel's. You get the very serious and stern big guy, and Tyrese plays with this spirit and this freedom and this joy that it almost brings a different version of Joel out, and it's infectious, and it travels to the rest of their teammates. And so you add that on to the skill set fit, and they can go on these runs like they went on last night. Like, this has been a rock fight series for long stretches of time.
Mm-hmm.
They scored 43 points in the third quarter. And the vast majority of that was just Joel, Tyrese, and to a lesser extent, Kyle Lowry running action after action after action. They're running double drags. They're running pin downs. I was talking to you before the show, Devon, that Nick Nurse said after the game, some of those sets that they used, the pin downs for Joel to have him coming off a movement, they ripped from LeBron's Cleveland teams. They're plays that were run for Channing Frye and Kevin Love. And that, in another way, is showing you this is how deep Nick Nurse is going to unearth plays that can get these guys unlocked. And so much of this is about Joel and his maturation and his willingness to fight through these injuries. But he's also getting help, right? Like, Doc Rivers isn't going 7 years deep in the playbook of another team to find something to counter what the Knicks are playing on defense. James Harden is not screaming around the corner, taking a quick catch and shoot three on a dribble handoff or blowing by people in transition. He has the guys with him and around him right now that if they can keep him upright, they have a chance this year and they have a chance in the immediate future. All we should be focused on right now, though, is that this suddenly feels like a different series to me because of one game.
100%.
And it's also nice to have, you know, Maxey was relaying a conversation he had with Joe in the fourth quarter where Embiid was like, what are you doing? Shoot more. He's like, well, you're scoring every trip down. Maybe you should keep, you know, shooting the ball. And the fact that Embiid finally has a teammate who says, hey, when you shoot more, doesn't panic. Just so nice. It's just so nice. It's so very nice. It's not something that we've ever really had before. It is nice that Tyrese has put in the work, that he has a confidence where when the MVP of the league tells you, hey, what the fuck are you doing? Shoot more. Okay, I will. It's just nice. It's just nice.
Yeah, the contrast is totally different from the other two guys that they have had. And Maxey doesn't take it personally. He takes that and he tries to bring that out of him when he says it himself. Having the best player in the world tell him to shoot more and encourage him to play his game off of him is something that is only going to be beneficial for those two and everyone else surrounding them. And you always hear, oh, it's a two-man game and all that. Well, look, a lot of guys don't get plays drawn up for them in a basketball game. Your two or three best players get plays drawn up for you in a basketball game. So, yes, those things are going to go that way. They are now answering the bell at this point, as our name of our show, of course, for the playoffs, our playoff slogan. They are doing that as far as their point production, their defense, and Embiid even unable to lift and jump. I pointed out, guys, last night, I know I didn't get a chance to talk to you about it really during your postgame hit from the arena, the rebound that he challenged with Hartenstein at the end
in the
to tip it
quarter,
away,
yes.
And Maxey grabbed it, grabbed that floorboard, ran and get it out of the corner. That was a big play because what does New York do? We already know. They did it again where they cut the lead to 8. That had people, I'm sure, on the edge of their seats in the arena and certainly in your homes as you watched it. But Embiid did that. Maxey had a rough shooting first half, came back in that third quarter, 4 for 7, including 2 threes and 6 assists in there, starting it off with the steal to go the other way to get the breakaway. They had to set the tone. They did. And for Maxey to be so fast, for us not to know what he was eventually going to be. Derek always talks about what his shooting numbers were coming out of Kentucky.
29%.
And not knowing if he was going to be able to pull that out and figure that out and fix it. But to know that he works as hard as he does in the offseason to correct anything as a young player, to be the best player that he can be, getting his MIP award last night. The 1% better every day thing that I'm sure a lot of people got tired of. But the guy has shown it, and he has done it.
Yeah.
And he is now the best partner. He has had the best partnership in this short time with Joel Embiid, albeit 4 years. But they haven't been the 1-2 punch until this year. And let's see what they can do. And that guy is certainly one to watch.
He does and says so much stuff that I look at and I say, ah, that's just nonsense.
Another guy,
just,
I would roll my eyes and be like, all right, buddy, whatever.
Yeah,
it's the
everything
Hurts.
From the 1% the better Hurts every thing, day right. to you know, all of that stuff. It's like there's no way somebody, any person in the world is that happy all the time. But he truly is, and he truly does get 1% better every day. And there's so much stuff that sounds like nonsense, and he is the exception.
I remember James Harden saying, I wish he would be a little meaner. I wish he would stop. He has that infectious smiling and the energy and all that stuff, but I want him to be a little meaner. No, he does it that way, and it works. And it
and
seems
I,
like it works.
I think we've seen him be meaner just in terms of the ruthlessness when they've needed it this year, right? Like you don't have to change who you are as a person or change your personality to be ruthless once you're on the floor. Once you're between those lines, you don't need to be smiley and Mr. Positivity. You got to go out there and kill the other team. And we've seen so often this year, granted not in this series, but a lot of those moments where Joel hits the bench and, hey, it's on Tyrese to carry the team. He's padded those leads because they're calling over switches and they're hunting matchups and he's going at guys that he needs to go at. I've seen him certainly last night, but in this series, he's seeing certain players in front of him and he's like, that motherfucker is dead meat. I'm going right after him. I'm going to the rim. I think the most ruthless we saw him last night was when they were running those double drags and essentially you're forcing the Knicks to make a decision between, Well, either you keep Hartenstein on him on an island, or you double him. And when they left Hartenstein on an island against him, he's killing them in space. When you doubled him, he's making the easy pass to Joel or Lowry or whoever it is, and he's making the right read. And it just felt like everything came together for him and the team in that moment. And that is not Mr. Positivity. That is Tyrese Maxey, like a shark smelling blood in the water. So I didn't want to believe to Derek's point, all the stuff he's saying early on, right? About
1% better.
1% better every day. It's like, yeah, a bunch of athlete cliches and what have you. The work he has put in, you can see every time he steps on the floor. We've talked so much this season about the second half adjustments and responding to different coverages and figuring things out as a leader. That all comes from that inner drive, from working with, Joel and trainers in the offseason, the upbringing from his parents to be coachable, to the points you guys were making earlier.
Sam Cassell, give him credit for
it. Listen, and all of that comes down to Tyrese being receptive and Tyrese taking, whether it's criticism, praise, instruction, and channeling that into productive work. Like, I can't say enough about him and how much he has helped Joel put a team on the floor this year that this is still kind of viewed as like, I don't know if it's a gap year, right? But with everything that's going to happen in free agency and cap space.
I mean, half of our chat right now is like, well, what if they sign Paul George and put 5 number ones for marketing? It's like, calm down. We've got a game on Sunday.
Exactly.
Yeah, but as all those conversations are happening, Tyrese is saying, why not now? I'm good enough, and good on him that he's gotten to that level.
It really is. And last one, because we're overdue for a break. It really is like, there's a part of me just like, it's a shame that it took this long and this many errors to finally get the one guy who fits. Because it would have been great to have this when Embiid was 25 before his knees had gone through, I think, 3 surgeries now, and before all the wear and tear that has accumulated, and before you get to the point where he's now 30. You would have loved for Tyrese Maxey to come around 5 years earlier. I guess we'll have to blame his parents for that. He could have gotten on that family a little
sooner. If Markel Fultz had just not forgotten how to shoot, who knows what would have happened.
Either one. But it is great that at the very least you have a seemingly perfect co-star who has developed quicker than expected to breathe new life into the second half of Joel Embiid's prime. Very much looking forward to it. Like I said the other day, I just hope Embiid has enough meniscus left to make the most of it. All right, before we get on to that, I want to talk to you about allergies, because I've screwed up the last couple days. If you can't tell, my nose I have not been popping my Claritin, and I'm feeling for it right now. I wish I had it with me. This time of year, it can get really, really bad. The first step in countering allergies is to understand what causes them. So what are the leading causes? Pollen from trees, grasses, and weeds are a primary cause of seasonal allergies. Symptoms flare up when the pollen you are allergic to is in the air. I'm going to try not to look at my phone as you guys show each other, whatever you're showing each other. Allergy symptoms usually appear shortly after exposure to the allergy triggers. Symptoms, which may seem similar to cold symptoms, include itchy, red, and swollen or watery eyes, sneezing, nasal congestion, and a runny nose, scratchy throat and coughing, brain fog, itchy nose, skin or eyes, headaches, or a cough. If you're feeling sneezy, runny, or itchy, it might be pollen allergies, which can make you feel pretty miserable, but there are ways to get relief. So here's what you can do. Sign up for Rite Aid Rewards emails at riteaid.com/rewards to receive email pollen alerts for your area. If the pollen count is high, try to stay indoors. Keep windows closed and run air conditioners as needed. Remove shoes and coats near your door to minimize tracking pollen inside your home. Take a shower before bedtime to help wash away pollen from your skin and hair. Then there are over-the-counter options available at your local Rite Aid. You can try anasalins to help flush out your nasal passages. And when symptoms are flaring up or when you know the pollen counts are high, you can try antihistamines like Claritin, which is what I usually go to, except for when I'm an idiot in the middle of a playoff run and forget to do so. 1 to 2 weeks before the allergen pollen you expect to be high, you can try a cortisone steroid. And if that is still not enough, ask a Rite Aid pharmacist if a different type of allergy medication like a decongestion might be necessary. Visit your local Rite Aid today. Stock up on allergy relief or catch up on immunizations for RSV, shingles, and more. Walk in or schedule a vaccine appointment at riteaid.com.
And this show is brought to you by the Bet Parks app. Get in the zone with the Bet Parks Sportsbook app. If you are feeling good about your baseball team tonight on the road in San Diego after their stint in Cincinnati, you can go ahead and check out and visit our good friends at the Bet Parks Sportsbook app. Right now, Philadelphia, minus 14 at the moment in terms of winning the game against the San Diego Padres tonight. Over, under 7.5 runs scored between the two teams. Is that going to happen? Well, if you feel pretty good or you're like, I know better than them, let me go to Bet Park Sportsbook app and let me place my wager here. Or if you even go back to the basketball team against New York on Sunday matinee here in Philadelphia, right now they are 5-point favorite over New York after their Game 3 victory. So if you feel pretty good about your two teams, what they can do, and you feel like you know better, or if you want to step into some basketball, professional basketball playoffs for tonight's games, again, money is in the moments. Go to the Bet Park Sportsbook app. Win big with all-day action. Win your first $10 bet and earn $125 in sports bonus bets. You play for fun. You love to win. You bet. Download the app and play along with us. Must be 21 or older. Please gamble responsibly. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, Derek, first of all, you got to put the Claritin in your bag, man. You gotta take that on the road.
We have established that I'm an idiot.
You are traveling a lot, man. You need to have that in your bag. Well, when you're talking about runny eyes or issues with the eyes and vision impaired because of all the pollen, and you need to wipe your face and maybe go and wash your face to get all that stuff out of your face so you can see clear and not sneeze all over the place. Last night it was reported, Kyle, that Adrian Wojnarowski talking about the Bell's palsy part of Joel Embiid. So not only are we dealing with him, watching him with the knee issue, but now also we have an answer for the question that we were discussing on Tuesday. What's with the sunglasses? Why are the Sixers not addressing it? Why is Joel Embiid not addressing it? Well, it appears we now know. And a lot of people may have different opinions on it all, but at least we have a little bit of clarity here now of what else he's dealing with.
Yeah, and so for anybody who missed it, Joel did talk, I'd say, quite a bit about the whole process last night. And this is something that started for him prior to the play-in game against Miami. He was suffering what he thought were migraines, and the eye was bothering him, and he ends up having it looked at. And the tricky thing, and Devon, I think you spoke with some people that you might have some more insight on the full ramifications of Bell's
Devon
palsy.
Always, whenever there is an injury or a weird medical thing, it seems like Devon's our go-to.
I got you covered.
He's got some inside info on this. But Joel's overarching thing was like, look, what they told me is that this could go away in weeks. It could go away in months. There's no real way of knowing.
It's like, I have a beautiful face and I prefer it when it doesn't droop.
My basic understanding is that it's often hard to tell where this stems from when it happens for people. And so I can imagine it's pretty scary when it starts happening, for sure. And Joel's been really transparent and honest about the fact that he was struggling those 2 months that he was out with the knee injury, that messed with his head. Mm-hmm. Now you had this on top of that, like the mental battle for him has been extraordinarily difficult over the last few months. And that's one of the things that makes this stretch to open the playoffs even more impressive. Like, he's talking about, I have blurry vision at times. I'm having to get constant eye drops to keep my eyes in, you know, working in functional order. I'm sure there are lots of things that he would not really talk to us about publicly that he's dealing with on a day-to-day basis. What I come away from it thinking is, like, the average person, if this happens to them, not only are they not playing professional basketball,
I would have called out for 3 weeks.
They're not leaving the house. They're staying at home. And this guy's in an arena where there's 20,000 people yelling and screaming. Yeah. There's bright lights and sound and noise. And the Wells Fargo Center is as loud as any arena in the league, not just because of the fans, but the ridiculously loud music and whatnot that they play throughout the game. And so it gives you a deeper appreciation for that. This is a point that Derek was making to open the show. This guy knows playing through pain and dealing with injuries, unfortunately, as well as any guy in the league. And so often people just say you're hurt and that means that you're soft or you're injury prone or whatever kind of label they want to put on you. Well, as part of that resolve that we've talked about Joel having compared to years past, he's sitting up there last night talking about, like, look, I'm out there. There's no excuse. If you're going to play, if you're going to decide I'm not going to quit and I'm going to be on the floor. What can I do to power through? It's not, and he's had moments and he admits, feel a little sorry for yourself. Like, why me? Why is this happening to me again? And then comes back and says, well, fuck that. If I'm going to be in the game, I'm going to do whatever I need to do. And so you gain, obviously all of us here have a healthy amount of respect for Joel and what he does out on the floor. But thinking about this specific thing on top of what he's already dealing with, and then he drops 50 points on, what was it, 19 shots?
19.
Just preposterous. Like, that feels impossible to me.
So speaking with someone that I'm close with and dealing with Bell's palsy themselves, I ask, can you tell me, even though I've known the things that they've already dealt with, now I'm dealing with it in a different way when talking about Joel Embiid and what he's now having to go through. So the migraine piece, Kyle, you mentioned that. That's a big part of what they share with me. The eyes being dry. Not only are they dry, from what I was told, it hurts. It hurts really bad when that happens. The light and the sound. Had no idea of how he's able to play a professional basketball game, running up and down the floor, hitting people, and doing so in a building that is, again, occupied by 20,000 people with these bright lights all over the place, to go out there and still play 38 minutes of that basketball game. And that's what he's averaging right now, 38.7 minutes. So it could come from stress, 29 games off, another injury during the season. That he spoke openly about that already, about how much it has affected him this season. Dealing with the fact that you don't know what you're going to feel like every day. Your mouth is droopy. You can't blink one eye. And all of these things that we are now seeing with Joel Embiid, again, speaking with them, they were talking about, does he have a stroke? This is just from watching the television, because that's what they dealt with. And seeing that, hey, something's off with him. I watched enough basketball over the years to see Joel Embiid. He's not right. Something's up. And that's some of the things that were relayed to me when it comes to now knowing exactly what Joel Embiid has. Now, again, just to be clear and transparent, they were saying this before we found out last night. And I was just like, oh, okay. But I didn't think anything of it. But they were right. And this is what he's dealing with right now. And so again, just for him to go out there right now in this series, he dealt with this before the Miami game. He's averaging 37.7 points, 8.7 rebounds, 5.3 assists, and only less than 3 personal fouls in those 37 minutes, 2 turnovers while dealing with Bell's palsy, where he's now, there's a shift to his whole body, the left side of his body at the moment, and he's still going out there and doing that while trying to win a playoff basketball game where they're trying to beat him up too. So when he goes in the first half, and Derek talked about it earlier, so did Kyle, and he's doing all this weird stuff out there. We've seen Joel Embiid do weird stuff before, and we're like, what the hell is he doing?
He used to pick a wedgie after every free throw for like a month.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
All right, what's this guy doing? He's grabbing at Mitchell Robinson's leg. We all agree was dirty. It was unnecessary. He's getting in Dante DiVincenzo's face. Look, he might have very well just been so ticked off from not having his balance right in this moment that he's just, I'm fighting everybody that's not in a red jersey. I'm just fighting everybody, including the officials at the moment too, which is why he had a flagrant and a technical in the first half. So I'm not making excuses. It's just this guy's dealing with a lot, and he's still going out there and doing what he did. So for him to do this and still go out there and to perform in the way that he did, yep, and now being open, because like Kyle said, you want to just sit and do nothing. My friend was giving me examples of what they didn't want to do, and that was to not show their face. Even to this day, speaking to these people, they're saying, can you see it? I'm like, no, I do. And right, that's just that's
the psychological
part of dealing with it. So mind you, he's talking to people in front of a microphone. He's on television every night, and he has to now carry that, where he might be a little self-conscious about that, and it might mess with his head a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think might. Like, he was wearing sunglasses every day for,
right,
you know. Yeah. And that's why when everyone went off on him on the whole, like, oh, why does he have his head down when he's talking about coming back from an 0-2 deficit? Well, because he doesn't want you to see his face, because he's got fucking Bell's palsy.
And the image that I see too is when he was laying on the floor. Remember when he got hit and he was laying on the floor and the camera came right down on him so we could see him sprawled out on the floor laying there and he's looking up.
You mean
the
knee injury?
Yes.
Yeah.
But he had already had it.
Right.
So this was just the knee injury. So he's laying there. And remember, people were like on social media, why is he not blinking?
Well, and I'll be honest with you. At the time, Derek and I are sitting on press row and I was like, oh, he's really hurt.
Yeah, and I think that was my combination. I think he was in shock a little bit and he had the Bell's palsy.
Yeah,
I think
you're thinking about the knee, of course, because that's all we knew. And now you're saying, all right, he's in shock.
Because he wasn't blinking with either eye at that point.
But he wasn't blinking. Yeah, and so it's tough to see. But again, just hats off to him to go out there and play a basketball game in this way.
Yeah, look, like you never – it's why I, as a rule, never question – guy's toughness, right? I'll say on the other side of the floor last night, I said this on Twitter, I want to say it again. I give Mitchell Robinson an absolute ocean of credit for trying to play through that injury that he had during that game. Because Derek and I sat next to each other last night and we're watching him. I don't know if it was as clear on the broadcast. You could probably see him laboring. We're watching him come down the floor and Mitchell Robinson was so hurt that he could not run straight. He's like, he's trying to go rim to rim and stay rim to rim. And he's like veering off to the side, not because he's trying to, because he literally couldn't walk or run in a straight line. And so I think people don't think of basketball as like a toughness sport, right? All these things get thrown around about load management and this and that. And oh, I get it's not football, right? It's not guys trying to take each other's heads off for 60 minutes every single Sunday. But this has been a real battle on both sides. It's unfortunate. It's kind of funny. Thibodeau, before the game, was asked about the chippiness in this series and said something to the effect of, yeah, it's been a real physical playoff series and it's been clean on both sides. So there's not a whole lot to. So, of course, it devolved into complete anarchy in the first 12 minutes of game three. Right. With, you know, a shot to the groin, the Mitchell Robinson thing, what have you. But this is also like this feels like real East Coast traditional basketball. I'm fucking absolutely loving this as someone who grew up during the 90s, watching, frankly, old Knicks teams just beat the hell out of other teams. I'm enjoying this a lot. I hope both teams are able to stay on that line of, you know, hard, physical, without it getting dirty. And hopefully the Mitchell Robinson Embiid thing is the last we see that's borderline like that. But
what was Mitchell Robinson's injury going in? Which
he had some kind of
left ankle
issue, and he did leave the arena in a walking boot. Yeah. So clearly, I mean, probably precautionary regardless, but this is now a huge storyline going into Sunday. Because as we saw, if the two options the Knicks have are Hartenstein and Robinson,
Precious
that's pretty
Achiuwa.
Good for them.
Precious Achiuwa
but
is
once
in
you
trouble.
Go from Hartenstein to Precious Achiuwa as the backup, New York ends up in quite a bit of trouble. And Joel has had a lot of success against him. So that, to me, is one of the biggest storylines of the series going
into
Sunday.
So on TV, you couldn't see him veering, but you could see that he wasn't running right. And after after Embiid fell on him, you could see something was up. So he just re-injured maybe the ankle. And when he came back down and got an offensive rebound, I was like, how did that dude get that offensive rebound, knowing that he was already dealing with what he was dealing with?
Dude, and listen, he took a huge charge from Joel right after that, picked up his third foul. Like, he basically felt he was out there and looked to me like he felt he needed to be on the floor, knowing Joel Embiid against Precious Achiuwa is a disaster for them. Hartenstein's already in foul trouble. So it's not often we sit here and I'm like pumping up some guy on the other team. But that's what the playoffs are about. It's guys who are willing to give up their body and everything they can to try to help their team win. So I want to show some respect to a Knicks guy on our show.
Absolutely. I got killed for that the other night when I was saying Josh Hart was playing really well during the live.
What's controversial about that? He scored 20-plus three straight games
and
four made threes.
Really? I'm not supposed to say Josh Hart is playing well right now and destroying the Sixers? I don't know.
Well, I have a feeling.
What's up?
There are going to be some more stressful games ahead this weekend, potentially through next week.
Okay.
You guys are going to be sitting at home, maybe at our watch party at Wicked Wolf on Sunday.
Yes.
Maybe at your own personal bar, wherever it might be. You want to choose chill, try to settle down. Well, what could help you better than that? Nice cold Coors Light. That's there all about choosing chill at Coors Light. You know you're going to be able to choose chill because you can get an ice cold beer where the mountains turn blue on the bottles and cans when they hit that perfect temperature. There's certainly been a lot of emotions flaring throughout this series, right? For example, when Derek and I were in New York for game one, as we're sitting in the aftermath of the game, the Knicks win the game, I'm getting screamed at by a lot of Knicks fans like, hey, you should write this, you should do this, you should do that. And I'm not going to say I handled myself as well as perhaps I should have, but eventually I said to myself, you know what? I don't need to worry about these people who just paid $750 to sit in the 200 level of Madison Square Garden. I can choose chill. And when I get home after choosing chill, I can reach for a Coors Light because Coors Light is a cold layered, cold filtered, cold packaged beer with a smooth finish, mountain cold refreshment. State of Colorado is eating good right now. They are 11 straight wins into that rivalry, air quotes, that they have with the Los Angeles Lakers. So we're going to be as chill here in Philadelphia as the Nuggets fans are about their little brother Lakers team.
So when I was going to say, would you say they're relevant right now or not? But
when you choose to rise above it all, like I have and others have certainly, choose chill and choose Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/PHLYBasketball. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And guys, I have another wonderful beverage and beverage company I want to tell you about. You've heard it a lot. That's our good friends at Olipop. Olipop is the new kind of soda with only 2 to 5 grams of sugar in every can, 9 grams of fiber on top of that. That sounds pretty great to me. You can get Olipop in almost 30,000 retailers nationwide as well as online, including the most recent launch at all Wawa stores. You can scoop a classic root beer or a strawberry vanilla at a Wawa near you. As I've told you guys, I have been a big soda drinker throughout my life, whether it was in late night studying in college or once you transition to this profession, you need that extra little bit of caffeine and whatnot, something sweet late at night to keep you going. Well, I'm a little more conscious of what I'm putting into my body, protecting my health, protecting my teeth, protecting my gut, my stomach. And Olipop allows me to do all that while still grabbing a delicious drink to go with, whether it's food on its own. And by the way, their vintage cola has just 2 grams of sugar compared to how many grams of sugar in a regular Coca-Cola, guys? 39 grams of 39. Sugar. That is a massive, massive difference if you are worried about the amount of sugar you're putting into your body. And by the way, still tastes great despite that big difference. So got to check out Olipop and all their classic flavors like vintage cola, classic root beer, orange squeeze, classic grape, strawberry vanilla, cream soda, cherry cola, the lemon lime, the watermelon lime. There are tons of flavors that are already out and tons of flavors that are on the way from our friends at Olipop. So use the code PHLY20 for 20% off of your next Olipop order. I know some of you already have. The discount only applies to one-time orders, not to subscription orders. Olipop is sold online at drinkolipop.com and Amazon, and it's available in almost 30,000 retailers nationwide, including Wawa, Target, Sprouts, Wegmans, ShopRite, and GoPuff.
And Rick Morse was saying, yo, Kyle, had my first Olipop last night, Dr. Goodwin.
Ooh.
I now got a new game day tradition.
Let's go. For the good Olipop. Luck, Dr. Goodwin.
Yes. And he says those Olipops are actually really good. So go out there and get it. I was in the Wawa the other day. Saw them right there. So go ahead and get your
I think Olipop. Our supply in the office is either very low or out completely. So we're going to have to re-up
pretty
soon.
Vince?
That suggests that they're very good because people have been going through them like crazy in the PHLY offices.
Yep. All right. Got to ask this before we get to our thoughts on game four for Sunday. Sunday, 1 o'clock. Is it 1 o'clock or 12 o'clock?
One o'clock.
We start at 12 o'clock. Well, while we're at it, Bree, let's tell everybody about, you mentioned it, Kyle, our watch party live show as well at the Wicked Wolf, 12th and Chestnut, Philadelphia, New York, game four. Hope that we see everybody out there. Now there's something. Of course, there's a game now. We got action. They might be tying up this series. So if you want to hang out on a Sunday, you're not doing anything, weather is beautiful, and you just want to get out of the house, you want to come hang out with us, presented by Chords Light, Wicked Wolf, on Sunday, April 28th, beginning at noon for us, pregame show, watch party, live show, of course, and our postgame coverage there as well. Myself, Rich Hoffman, will be there. We'll talk it all out, yell, scream, whatever you guys are going to do. Get your thoughts off about what's happening in the basketball game on Sunday. Hope to see everybody there. We hope that they have a long playoff run so we can do a lot of different things with everybody out there. That's for sure. So let's get to this one a little bit, Derek. When we were talking about it the other day, Buddy Hield, I just looked at his average for the series. Let's say three games, he's averaging 0.7 points per game in 9.7 minutes. Yeah. All right.
Gotta do the push of T.
So with it, we talked about, hey, they need to do something, whether it's KJ Martin, Ricky Council, campaign, they have to do something. He pulled the campaign card, Nick Nurse did last night, and paid dividends immediately when he came into the game. The energy that we discussed, it was on full display. I wasn't in there. You guys were. What was the crowd like when he hit that first three, and then the energy that he just kept providing in there? And clearly it was the right move.
Yeah, I mean, Buddy's giving you nothing. So you have to try something else. It would be insanity to not switch something up at some point when you had 17 points from your bench in two games, only two of which came from Buddy Hield. Look, we've talked about it a lot. There are concerns with Cam in the backcourt defensively, but he gives you a live dribble. He gives you some activity. He gives you some shooting. He's not going to hesitate. He gives you some playmaking. All little doses of skill sets that you desperately, desperately need. And with how the Sixers can hemorrhage points without Joel Embiid and how the Sixers struggle to score without Joel Embiid, you need something to at least try to offset that. I thought he gave them good minutes, obviously, but it really is all that. It's just movement, speed, ball handling, a little bit of shooting. He's been good. He gave a big lift.
He had one of my favorite post-game pressers of any player since I started covering this team. Just such a refreshing perspective of a role player and really insightful, taking you into what it takes to go from essentially being a non-entity in this series to you're playing 15 big minutes and you need to produce. And Cam was, he didn't say that he's in a coach's mindset on the sidelines, but that's sort of where he was going with what he said, where he's like, look, I got to be locked into the details. Like if I'm in this game, what would I be doing here? If I'm in this guy's spot, is he doing the right thing? This is what I would need to do if I'm there. And then talking about the energy you need to have on the sidelines, right? What was the exact quote? Was energy costs nothing?
When you tweeted that out last night, I brought that up on the show just because I thought that was perfectly said by
just
campaign.
Like such a great snapshot of what it takes to hang around as a role player. But he expanded on it. The larger quote was saying, look, human beings feed off of energy, whether you're a basketball player, whether you're just a person in a normal work setting in an office or what have you. When you're surrounded by positivity, it makes you want to be more positive. It makes you want to step up and meet the challenge of the day. And so Cam said, when I'm on the sideline, I'm hopping up and down. I'm yelling and screaming. I'm supporting my teammates because I know when I'm on the floor, I want that from my guys. I want my fans that cheer for me, campaign, to bring that same level of energy. And so the second that he gets in the game, he gets an assist to Nick Batum. He hits a quick three after a Knicks bucket. He's beating his chest. He's waving his arms. He has not stopped somebody on defense in his life, really, but he's sinking down and he's getting low in a defensive stance and saying like, I'm here, man, and get behind me. And so that, talking about the Maxi thing earlier, like the personality, I think that's another example of an ultra positive guy, that having those types of guys, even when Cam doesn't play, is valuable, right? He's keeping the mood up, the spirit up in the locker room. But then you bring him in the game. He's been in these situations, right? That run in Phoenix, he was a huge part of that run to the finals, right? He's a big spark off the bench. He said last night, a lot of what he learned about staying ready and being locked in enough that you can just come into a playoff game and give 15 great minutes, he learned on that team with your cousin Devon, but playing behind or with or filling in for Chris Paul, just knowing at any time it might be my time to step up. And so we talked about it leading into the playoffs. You're going to need just about everybody to go on a real run. They got a campaign game last night, and hand up, I will say, you guys know, coming into the playoffs, I wasn't really hoping that he would play in general. I thought he was going to be a complete liability defensively. I mean, there are still chances
Nick
that
he will.
Didn't
know if he was going to play either because he played 3 minutes in the first two games.
So, but it's going to take everyone. In fact, he ended up superseding D'Anthony Melton's minutes last night. Nick talked after the game, said there were times we thought, hey, now's Melton's chance to come in. But you roll with the hot hand, and good for him for taking that chance with Cam, arguably needed to with how Buddy was playing. But I think he has made his case. I think he's playing Buddy's minutes in game four.
Even after he made those threes, the thing that what he opened up was the drive to the basket. And there was a play with he and Embiid on a screen and roll, and Embiid was going left, campaign was going right. So he took the middle, he ball faked like he does. On that drive, the hesitation was there that had the defense just a little bit off balance. It was mainly the big man making a decision of what he wanted to do. And then he dropped in that patented teardrop that he does right there in the middle of the lane. So not only his three-point shooting, but it's also that adding to it that can also help out with what he does. And we talked about it on draft night. So many people were ticked off at the Pat Beverly move and his campaign. The one thing that I said at the time was, I don't know if he's going to play because we knew the Kyle Lowry piece was also going to come. But when it comes
to
the playoffs.
And Lowry had a big, huge second half.
Yes.
Well, I know we brought it up earlier. But so,
and to
big
that
half
point, though, when we were talking about we didn't know what his role would be, we also thought Melton would come back at some point.
But the only thing that I said was, he's played in big games because of the run that Kyle's talking about in 21 when they went to the finals. And when Chris Paul went down, we were like, uh-oh. What are we going to do now? Campaign stepped in and started 12 games, played really well. They kept winning basketball games. And then when the postseason came along, he played in those games too. So I was only pointing out that he has been there so the moment wouldn't be too big. And when you talk about him bouncing around, he's always bouncing around, not just in game. It's before the game, in practice.
It's at the podium. He's sitting there like,
it's at home. Yeah. That dude does not stop. That's his energy. That's who he is. That's what he does. So it's good to see it, just to see him get that. And frankly, hell, we were right. We said put one of these other guys in there because you needed to change something with Buddy Hield not giving you something. I hope at some point Buddy Hield does make a shot for them, but campaign, those minutes have to go to him right now. And we'll see if it leads to something else where Nick Nurse sees a moment where he has to call on another number. The Kyle Lowry piece, he's been the third best player for the Sixers in the entire series because of the 18-point performance in the second quarter that he gave them in game two. He had 18 points in
game one,
and he played really well. He's just been consistently, I'm just playing good basketball, averaging 11 right now, not turning the basketball over. He had a big three last night in the third quarter where they made their nine in the frame. And he's just been playing some good basketball. I thought his shot was big, too. Pick and roll with Embiid. DiVincenzo went with Hartenstein on Embiid late in the fourth quarter. Kyle hesitated just enough, picked up his dribble, but ball faked, and then knocked down that 15-foot jumper to make that basket to basically essentially lock in the game. He's been playing really well.
He had that big corner three, too. Real big.
So is that the fourth quarter or the one I'm talking about in the third?
It was in the second half.
I thought it was the third.
It all blends together at a certain point.
Yeah.
I will say, though, like outside of that, even more than the offense, and he's been one of their more consistent offensive players, especially given the lift he gave you in game one, just the defense. Like, it feels like every time they put the ball on the floor, his hands are there. He's making that driving lane tough to get through. He's stripping a lot of they're not getting all the loose balls, but he's stripping a lot of ball handlers. He's been playing really, really pesky, annoying. He'd piss me off if I was playing against some kind of defense, and I appreciate that because they don't really have anyone else who does that.
Yeah, and
that's what makes him valuable.
As a screener, he's almost always, if he's not the smallest guy on the floor, he's very close, or at least shortest guy on the floor. I shouldn't call him small because he's pretty stocky, right? But
we'll go with that.
I talked about this exact thing with him in the locker room last night about, you know, how do you how can you make an impact as a screener, as a guy who's, you know, 6 feet tall? And he goes, you have to be willing to sell out. You have to give up your body and say, I'm going to do whatever it takes to try to, you know, guys coming around me, he is not going to be able to track whoever I'm screening for. And the flip side of it, as Lowry says, the screener most times is the guy who ends up being open. And so on some of those plays where he's setting either the first or second screen on the double drag, he's then relocating. And as they're doubling Joel or they're doubling Tyrese and they're kind of stuck between worlds on those sets, Kyle on the wing or in the corner is the beneficiary of doing the gritty, the tough work and throwing a shoulder into somebody's midsection. And so I think he understands as well as anybody on this team that the accumulation of physicality is super useful in a playoff game where by the end of 48 minutes, no matter how well conditioned you are, no matter how healthy you are, a lot of these guys are going to be really tired. And it's about making sure from minute one to minute 48 that they are feeling you in some way. So I have a great appreciation for what he's brought to this team.
He also took a big charge in the second half as well. And that's, again, that's what he does. That's what he does. Let's get to a couple of these super chats before we get out of here, get the guys' thoughts on the game on Sunday before we step away. Ash Monroe, Joel and Brunson arguing about foul grifting was hilarious. A couple of laughing emojis. If you've seen the video out there on social media, it highlights where Jalen Brunson is showing Joel Embiid what he does, and then Embiid is countering with what Jalen Brunson does to get those foul calls. Both of them got to the free throw line last night.
It's been the funniest part of this whole series, right? Both fan bases are like, oh my God, I can't believe all the, what a grifter he is. It's like,
to be fair,
have some self-respect. Yeah. Like, who do you think you're rooting for?
There's a little bit of that going on in our Discord as well.
Correct.
It's been on both sides.
It's both fan bases.
In fact, I think it was almost directly, Ash, if I remember correctly. Both are professionals at what they do. Both are annoying for the other team's fan base. And both are effective at what they do, too.
And the one thing I will continue to say, like, there's a lot of bitching about 21 free throws for Joel. And he shot a lot of
six of them were freaking intentional.
Yes. So it's really, like, the real amount of free throws he shot is around 15.
15
Brunson
12.
Shot 12. Yeah. That is not a huge gap between the two players. They are doing what they always do. Jalen Brunson is Trae Young with a New York media reputation in a lot of ways. I think Jalen Brunson at this point is a little bit better, or
yes,
I at least like how he plays more. But a lot of the same stuff, right? Like getting to the mid-range and then the whoop, jumping backwards into somebody's chest or whipping his arms out for somebody. And I absolutely am not criticizing him. For him. He is a small guard in a big man's game doing whatever it takes to help his team win. It's what he should do. But that's also what Joel Embiid should do, is make sure refs are seeing contact, put guys in foul trouble. Part of the reason that you build around a foul-drawing big man is to get them deep into their bench early in games so Joel or whoever else can attack backups and pick up bigger leads as better players have to sit on the bench in foul trouble. It's all part of the game. So there's been a lot of crying. Any Knicks fans coming in here crying about the officials after the league had to basically come out and say, man, we really fucked up the end of game two. Get the hell out of here.
Three mistakes in a span of 10 seconds, the most critical possession of the game to give you a comeback. Yeah,
cry me a river.
All right, last one. Alex Halliday. Embiid villain arc is so sick, he's been a bad man. Well, he is a villain. You do know that.
He has to win the series, though. Like, yeah, this is all a great little mid-series high, but they've got to finish it off.
He started it by saying what he said, and then his actions then followed. Now he has to go win the series and get things done. All right, Derek, your thoughts of what do you need to do in game four? What do you need to see that carries over from game three to game four to even the series up?
I mean, in all honesty, I think their game plan is pretty sound at this point. Like, they've figured out the rebounding differential. I thought their defense on Brunson took a step back. If there's anything that, you know, bullshit Hartenstein floater that he gets every time Joel Embiid drops miss. Off.
What is he like?
He's like
14
of
15 on that shot.
He's
in
made
this
everyone.
Series.
It drives me nuts. Every gosh darn, he's this series Aaron Baines.
He's
it's
that,
really,
he's that
really
young,
driving
man.
Me nuts. But a way to defend that, Nick Nurse tried to put Tobias on him for a second.
I don't know how you defend that, because he's setting a screen and then Jalen is probing the baseline and just dropping it. I don't know what you do.
Like I said, in the third quarter, Nick put Tobias on him for like five possessions and put Embiid on Hart so he could roam off of him. But Hart's making every three he's thrown up there, so there's no perfect answer to that. But more or less, like, I think their scheme is fine. They've just, like, if you can get role players, I thought they came out and they tried to get Kelly established a little bit earlier there in the first quarter, maybe get him going, and certainly he had his best offensive game of the series. Mm-hmm. But you would love to see you know, a couple more role players, maybe give Tobias a touch early, even though he's been pretty much worthless offensively the entire series. But you've got to do something.
Tobias a touch never. How about that? That's where
I'm not talking a mid-post-post up or something like that. I'm just saying a touch. But something to get role players going, because you are relying on Maxey and Embiid an absurd degree. And through three games, they've been 3-for-3. But it would be great if somebody else did something.
Kyle, your thoughts? Game four?
Maybe just hope that Josh Hart is not Ray Allen. It's kind of the... Because, look, Brunson, you want to talk about... It's like, oh, they only won by so much. Joel scored 50. Brunson had a big game last night. 39. And it still was not...
39-13, right? 12-13? Yeah.
Still not that close down the stretch. Like, New York's offense has been buoyed big time by the offensive rebounding. They did not hurt Philadelphia as much last night. I think if you go down to the... On the percentages, both teams were essentially dead even on the offensive rebounds. The raw totals tilted in New York's favor because they missed more shots. So I think they're going to have to figure out a better, or at least adjust a little bit to stop Brunson next game. I think he probably has settled in a little bit against the, it's been a lot of rear view contests and helping off of shooters like Hart. And so now that he has, he's seen it for three straight games. I think his passing reads were pretty good last night on top of the scoring. So he might be able to really kill you in game four if you show him those same looks. I don't think Nick Nurse is someone who is going to rest on his laurels and just say, yeah, we're just going to keep doing the same thing against him. I think they'll probably switch up some matchups. They'll play a little bit more zone. We'll throw some things at him. But yeah, I think I said it after game two. I think the Sixers have been the better team in every way except for the effort, the hustle plays, the rebounds. And again, that is a credit to New York and the way they play. They grind you down. They play physical. Their brand of basketball is making every possession count and sometimes turning one possession into two and three and four opportunities. And they deserve an immense amount of credit for the way they're able to leverage that in the first two games of the series. The Sixers have responded. They've done a better job of cleaning that up. And as they've done so, they have started to pull ahead. So I think as simple as it sounds, if the Sixers can maintain or at least keep it around even in the possession battle and the rebounding battle, I think they're going to win. I think they've had the two best players in the series. And so I think that will end up mattering more as long as they can control all the extra stuff.
Josh Hart, by the way, in the three games, averaging 21 points, 11.3 rebounds, 3.7 assists, shooting 52% from three on 7.7 attempts a game. So there's that.
You could, and people are saying, well, stop leaving him open. And I agree, at some point you got to contest those shots.
They do now.
Even if they leave him open, though, like the odds of him shooting 50-whatever-the-fuck percent from three over the next three games are very low. Like there's got to be a regression coming. He's not that good of a shooter.
Well, when he misses badly, too. But that's the thing.
But he follows his shot. Yes. So oftentimes, shooter knows where the ball is going. He follows his shot and gets that offensive rebound more times than not. So... It's still a decent shot because there's a pretty good chance that he might at least crash the glass, get the rebound, or someone else picks it up off a deflection because he does that. But I agree with you. There's no way he can. You have a series where guys just have a series.
And again, if he does,
he can't keep that up.
Tip your cap to him, right?
It's like when I come in and have two good shows in a row, everybody knows I'm going to have a bad show. I'm just not good enough to have three in a row. He's not good enough to have four games in a row. It's
what was
just
this one? Was this a good one for you or a bad one?
I'm kind of tired. I feel like it was probably low energy.
Right. You've been on the road a lot.
I just didn't get a good night's sleep. I don't know. Then it happens.
I think it's being
bad
on the
a little
road.
Bit of upper respiratory. Might be sinuses. I don't really know yet. We'll see. We'll find out.
Got to go
we'll
to Rite Aid.
Got to push through it, though.
Bagels and Coke and get a coffee. You know, it's pretty good. All right. Let's get ready to get out of here. Say goodbye to all the folks. I'll be back on Sunday with Rich.
I don't know about all the folks. We got some cockroaches in here today, so might have to
Feeling with New York, got to go with rats.
Nah.
They were that was mentioned in the chat last night, the New York Rats and all that stuff. Yeah, but I'll be back on Sunday.
Pizza Rat is a...
The guys will be at the arena. We'll talk to them at the end of the show. Of course, live from the arena, we'll be at Wicked Wolf. So we hope to see you on Sunday, 12 noon, as we start our pregame coverage at 12:30.
Wow, Pumpa's firing some real shots. Seriously. At Derek, by the way.
It's one thing to be self-deprecating. It's another thing for you to do it.
Saying you've never had two good shows in a row. Yikes.
Wow. Well, who do we have?
Anyway, thank you everyone, including the Knicks fans, for being in
Not
here
Pumpas.
Today.
Fuck you, Pumpas.
Shout out to my guy, Martian Lynch,
He's
the
angry.
Number one Philadelphia roaster in the chat.
What up,
Bootzilla. Martian? Ray Burrows, who, by the way, Ray, I saw all your Everton Liverpool things. I'm not going to say, I'm still wearing a Liverpool hat today. I understand they've been embarrassing themselves, but those are my guys. I continue to ride with them. Shout out to Wawa Marvel. Shout out to Khalil
Wawa
Wilson.
Marvel.
Shout out to Brian XTC. Hey, Aaron.
What up, Aaron?
Derek Bodner, who the hell is that guy?
Got yelling at puppets.
Seth Fisher. Rick Morse was active today. Ash Monroe.
Ash.
The name I always hate to say. Daryl Morey's yams with an exclamation point.
Yams.
Derek doesn't like this. I'm still shouting out puppets. He's checking in from overseas. We love you, buddy. We got Dave, Aaron Strange.
He's balling his fist up over here, puppets.
X-Man.
What up, X?
We have too many Knicks fans, and I'm not going to say your names because you don't deserve the attention talking about whatever you're talking about today. We got Maine, SB Cole.
What up, Maine?
Public enemy number 4 or 5 right now, Money Mar,
yeah,
Jim G.
He's deep down the list now.
Rick Sachs. Who else? Who are our super chatters today?
We got Ash.
We had Ash again. And Alex.
What up, Alex?
Thank you to Alex.
Thank you
to Fai Chi. Jay got Clamps. Satirical Zero. That's
Whoa.
A new one for me.
What up with that name?
Yeah, thank you to each and every one of you who
go.
Are here
you can
today and have been here this week. If you have not already, hit that subscribe button. Hit the bell icon so you get notifications each and every time.
See, look at that.
We go live. And if you hit the thumbs up button, I can guarantee you Sunday will be a wild day at Wells Fargo Center. We will see you.
Oh, Aaron Strange late. Hey, Knicks fans, don't forget your ass cream on Sunday.
We will see you in one form or another.
Again, Aaron. That's from Aaron. We have to read it because it's a super trend.
And our guy Rich will be at the Wicked Wolf for a watch party. Go hang out with them for the game. Derek and I will be there at the arena to bring you all kinds of updates,
got
information, injury news,
stuff.
All kinds of stuff. We got prizes, as Devon said, at the event. Hope that you guys can make it out.
Yes.
If not, we will still talk to you after the game and see where we're at on Sunday.
Thanks, Bree.
We all silly like the mayor.